Thank you very much. First of all, I appreciate the invitation to be here this afternoon and to speak. I see my function here as a dual one, or a dual role. On the one hand, as one who is a committed religious Zionist and who identifies, you know, with the movement of religious Zionism and its aspirations, proud of its accomplishments, so you're still the president, here with us. Also concerned about the direction and the future prospects, both ideologically and practically, both in terms of challenges and opportunities that are unique to our present time. Both in Eretz Yisrael and here in the diaspora, some of the challenges are overlapping, and some of them are quite different and reflect different perspectives, which is part of our larger topic. But maybe more importantly, in addition to being a speaker, I'm here this morning, or it's afternoon, excuse me, as the son of one of our honorees and an admirer of both of our honorees, someone who is appreciative in both capacities of the rabbinic leadership that each of them has exhibited in this and in other areas. And my basic argument will be that the most important contribution of America to religious Zionism has been the effective ability to integrate the issue of Eretz Yisrael, both generally and State of Israel more particularly, into the broader spectrum of Jewish thought and Jewish life. And I think that in America, because of the rabbinic leadership of people like my father, Rabbi Rosenzweig, and Rabbi Roth, I think that's precisely what encapsulates and crystallizes what is special and singular about the American perspective on religious Zionism, both on a pragmatic level and an ideological level. I think that some of the advances in the area of Jewish thought and the application of Jewish law to issues of religious Zionism took place, not coincidentally, on the ground of America. My credentials as a son, hopefully, are obvious. My brother is here as well. Certainly, he's just as loyal a son as I am. But I have to say that, you know, when it comes to being a congregant, I'm much more loyal. So I've been probably, I think, the longest, existing congregant of my father's, you know, from the time of Toronto through Kew Gardens. And although I'm part of the two-fifths, together with my brother here, that has not made Aliyah, my three siblings all live in Eretz Yisrael. Something that reflects certainly my parents' very passionate commitment to religious Zionism. Though we are here, I think our commitment, is certainly based on, anchored in the same roots. And the opportunity that I've had to watch my father throughout the decades, to hear his drashos, I say I'm pretty sure I've heard more of them than anyone. The amount that are dedicated to Eretz Yisrael and the different perspectives that all rooted in a common commitment, but the ability to apply it to all sorts of varied situations over the years, observing his work in history and in halacha, has really been the foundation of my own religious Zionism. In the case of Rabbi Roth, I have the special privilege every Tuesday night of engaging with him in, I guess we call it a Mulchamta Shel Torah, a spirited Torah dialogue, in which I hope that we always end up, Nasim Oavim, Zeh. Rabbi Roth is a difficult audience because he's somebody who is passionate about his learning and his ideas, philosophy and halacha, and somebody who always enhances the discussion. And his career in the rabbinate, together with my father's, I think there were classmates in the beginning, really parallels the same kind of commitment and I think the same kind of impact. I'll try to get back to this later on. While my father's chosen additional field is history, Rabbi Roth's is philosophy. But as again, the president of Mizrahi, my father was a vice president of Mizrahi, as the editor of a journal, Morasha, which is really dedicated to religious Zionist thought, and from my point of view, with a particular perspective, unique perspective, mostly of a broader American outlook on religious Zionism, His writings and his books and his thinking and his talking, again, is something that has enhanced, I think, the body of religious Zionism in an immeasurable way. So I just begin with a measure of Hakaras HaTov to both of them. I think the impact that they've had on Jewish thought and on pragmatically, as I say, on the ground. I know that the amount of Olim, the percentage in my father's Kehilos, is extremely, it's unusually high. And I don't have similar statistics or even anecdotally for Rabbi Rotz, but I would be shocked if it wasn't very similar because of the emphasis that both have continued to put on the role of Eretz Yisrael and Medinas Yisrael, and again in a very nuanced and subtle and sophisticated way. The title was advertised as the thought of religious Zionism in halachic, American halachic writings. I didn't actually know that or agree to that, but I did want to speak about, in connection with our honorees, the impact of American Jewry and especially American rabbinic leadership on religious Zionist thought. Let's begin with the problem. When we speak about the American contribution to religious Zionism, apparently we're dealing with a kind of oxymoron. After all, what is the most obvious, you know, and salient expression of religious Zionism, if not Aliyah, the decision to actually live in Eretz Yisrael? And particularly in our era, where this is no longer something that has to be a dream or even that includes excessive hardship, the capacity for Jews to pick up and to live in Eretz Yisrael today is obviously a special gift Kadosh Baruch Hu has given us in our historical circumstance. So what do we mean when we speak about a religious Zionist contribution by American Jewry if seemingly our presence on these shores seems to defy the purpose of Zionism? However, obviously, the concept of Shlilat HaGolah, which was popular some decades back, especially in Eretz Yisrael, negating anything that comes from the diaspora, is something which is historically absurd, halachically invalid, philosophically unacceptable. Obviously, much of Jewish thought, Jewish thinking, and Jewish life has been lived outside of Eretz Yisrael in the diaspora. The greatest proponents, the most inspiring and most eloquent spokesmen of religious Zionism are, of course, individuals who yearned, who aspired to be in Eretz Yisrael, but whose career was actually carried out in Chutz La'aretz. Whether we're talking about the author of the Kuzari, Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi, or the Ramban, both of whom made it to Eretz Yisrael only at the end of their lives, but whose career took place in Spain, and of course other such luminaries as well. The beginning of the Zionist movement and the religious Zionist movement, as we heard a little bit earlier, right, came obviously on the shores of Europe, not in Eretz Yisrael. There was no way that it could have. Along with Rav Kook, who was represented so ably by Rabbi Karmi earlier, the other great giant, ideological giant of religious Zionism in the modern era, in the post-Eretz Yisrael era, of course, is Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, the Rav Zatzal. The picture was referred to in just a few minutes ago. What I would like to do very briefly is focus on some of the Rav's contributions, because I think that the contributions of his Talmidim, Rabbi Rosenzweig, Rabbi Roth, being excellent examples of really loyal Talmidim, both in their relationships with the Rav, their understanding of and their ability to implement his ideology and to take it in their own ways, whether it's through history and philosophy, I think that the Rav represents a certain model of religious Zionism quite different from Rav Kook and mostly what prevails certainly in the Merkaz Arav circles in Eretz Yisrael, that I think is singularly related to the American contribution, both because I think it had to be that way, and of course because of the impact of the Rav more directly as well. What do I mean by this? The fact is that the diaspora was always poised to make a special ideological contribution to our understanding and appreciation of religious Zionism precisely because of the challenge that I referred to earlier. Certainly partially as an aspect of defensive posture, right? How do you justify a living life outside of Eretz Yisrael when you have the capacity to be there? It forces one to come to grips, if one is honest, right, with that challenge, and in some cases opens windows to a better understanding, a wider understanding of the role of Eretz Yisrael in halachic life, and in particular in our era, the role of Medinas Yisrael, the status of Medinas Yisrael, in the larger mosaic of Jewish life. Someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael is not motivated to grapple with that issue and may not be, therefore, sufficiently engaged with it to be able to formulate the valuable insights and valuable perspective which in turn enriches Jews world over, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael as well, by broadening, deepening, making more profound the notion and the impact of religious Zionism. Jews who live in the diaspora and yet who are acutely sensitive to their halachic responsibilities are uniquely equipped and sensitive to the possible greater impact of Eretz Yisrael beyond its borders, in history, in world Jewry, and in the interface between the pragmatic and the ideological issues that we face. Of course, as I said, the impact of actual life in the United States, the responsibility of leadership, imposes this kind of responsibility and challenge as well. You have to decide on priorities, the local community versus Eretz Yisrael, even a simple matter such as support for political candidates who espouse, let's say, a position on Eretz Yisrael which is attractive, but maybe some domestic positions which are problematic, forces every Jew, and especially rabbinic leaders, to come to grips with the role that Eretz Yisrael plays. Some years ago, I know my father and Rabbi Roth, in their leadership of the Rabbinical Council of America, were involved in an issue, for example, where the question of emigration from the then Soviet Jewry, Soviet Union, was being debated. The Russian government at one point opened up the doors for emigration, and the Israeli policy at the time was to try to dictate that people leaving the former Soviet Union would exclusively be allowed to settle in Eretz Yisrael. And again, rabbinic leaders in America were faced with a dilemma. Rav Soloveitchik ultimately was very involved, gave direction in terms of what the policy should be. Beneath the surface, ideologically, the question partially was, very much of the question was, to what extent do the priorities of Eretz Yisrael dictate for Chutz La'aretz? And the issue isn't simply diaspora versus Medinas Yisrael or Eretz Yisrael, but I think ultimately, from my point of view, that a truer, a deeper, a more profound understanding of the role of religious Zionism and Eretz Yisrael, its responsibility to world Jewry, ended up determining a policy in that issue in a much more complex way than had it been left simply, excuse me, to Israeli leaders. The role of Rav Soloveitchik as the foundation of this perspective and ideology contrasts in some respects with the ideology of Rav Kucht. The impact on his Talmidim is a critical part of this story. Let me just highlight it in the following way, in the following ways. The Rav, as is known, gave several very famous lectures to the Mizrahi. Originally in Yiddish, it was the Fear Droshos, and then I guess the Refunf, and then it became translated into Hebrew and English, the Droshos. If you analyze those Droshos, just objectively, there are self-containing sections in those Droshos which have nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael, with the ideology of religious Zionism, which are standalone gems on all sorts of different topics. Tshuva, repentance, Jewish destiny, the role of halakha in Jewish values, etc. I don't have the time, but we could analyze them even by subject heading. We could count them quantitatively and certain qualitatively, the impact that they have had. And yet, the ability to weave these into, that they should be not only connected to, but they should be his statement about religious Zionism is a reflection of this broader perspective. The idea that Eretz Yisrael, that Medinas Yisrael, is not a topic in its own right in which we try to isolate, you know, importance, but is one which is integrated into the much larger world of Jewish history, Jewish philosophy, and especially the world of halacha. The Rav had a particular fondness for a certain perspective, halachic perspective, on matters of Eretz Yisrael, which, again, just 2 minutes, can be characterized as follows. The Rambam, as is well known, sometimes deals with the status of Eretz Yisrael in a seemingly anachronistic way. The Rambam rules in several places that the Kedusha of Ezra, the second investment of sanctity in the land of Israel, is the one that was durable. And everybody knows that the geographic expansion, or the geographic constriction, actually more accurately, of those boundaries left certain areas that were in the original geography of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael on the outside. And yet, the Rambam employs the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael in the time of the conquest of Joshua, which according to his own rulings were no longer determinative when it came to the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, he operates with those boundaries when it comes to several issues. The Rav noted this, as did others, and formulated the following explanation. There are two dinim of Eretz Yisrael. There's a din of Kedushas Karka, the sanctity of the soil, that relates to matters having to do with Trumos and Maestros and Shvius and Tevel and Chala. All those issues have to do with the nitty-gritty, the actual produce of Eretz Yisrael. That's obviously a matter of Kedushas Haaretz. There are other issues which affect all of Jewish life. Things like rabbinic ordination. We know that the Sanhedrin, when it operates in Eretz Yisrael, also holds sway in the diaspora. Kiddush HaChodesh, today is Rosh Chodesh. We know that the calendar affects both the diaspora and, of course, Eretz Yisrael. Other issues as well, Par Halam Davar Shel Tzibur, the idea of a communal atonement as opposed to an individual one, depends on the population, the majority population in Eretz Yisrael. Now I've noted that these seemingly have nothing to do with the sanctity of the land. After all, they apply throughout the Jewish world. Moreover, the geographic boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, right, do not seem to be applied consistently, given Maimonides' ruling that the geography that is invested with sanctity is only the Ezra boundaries, not the Yehoshua ones, and yet we invoke Yehoshua boundaries when it comes to these various rules. The Rav developed the theme that there are two aspects of Eretz Yisrael. One is the Kedushas Karka, narrowly defined, the sanctity, the soil of Eretz Yisrael. And the other is the concept of Eretz Yisrael, the Shem Eretz Yisrael. In the third, I believe, or fourth of the Drashos, he develops this even further. The truth, this is an old and favorite topic. It's already to be found in the Igros HaGrid. Sometimes he quotes it in his father's name, sometimes in his own. But in the Drashos, he makes an additional suggestion. He says that the Bris of Sinai, where the Torah was given, lays no special emphasis on Kedushas Eretz Yisrael as anything more than a mitzvah among the 613 mitzvahs. In fact, for the Rambam, there's a problem. The Rambam never even counted Yishuv Haaretz, living in Eretz Yisrael, as a mitzvah. However, what he characterizes as Bris Avos, relating to the history of the Jewish people, the covenant with our forefathers, that is something which focuses on the ideal, the ambition of life in Eretz Yisrael. The Rav argued that the dinim of Kedushas Karka represent only one small slice of the role that Eretz Yisrael plays in our lives. What's more important is the concept of Shem Eretz Yisrael, the fact that we identify throughout history as a people with the history of our people and with the national headquarters in Eretz Yisrael. The nuances are very important and I can't go into them, but I think that this, from my point of view, represents the broader, deeper, the more pervasive and more profound, albeit much less hyperbolic, contribution of the Rav to the concept of religious Zionism. There are a number of Gemaras, Midrashei Halacha, that make very, very startling claims about the centrality of Eretz Yisrael. Gemara Masechet Ksuvos, Daf Kuf Yud, Hador B'chutzlarz K'mi She'eino Eloka, like a godless person. The famous Sifrei in Parshas Ekev, which seems to imply that the only reason we do any mitzvos in Chutzlarz is for practice. Some of the more enthusiastic or hyperbolic religious Zionists seized on these statements in order to underscore the centrality of Eretz Yisrael, the idea that it is indispensable. For the same reason, the Kuzari is oft-quoted for his inspirational, but from a halakhic point of view, a somewhat exaggerated emphasis on the Inyan HaEloki aspect that is necessary, that is connected to Eretz Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik, on the other hand, kind of shied away from all of this. Indeed, his explanation of Ksuvos Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis is that it's limited to the aspect of Bris Avos. The Beis Halevi, his great-grandfather, had a particularly interesting explanation about the Sifrei in Parshas Ekev. The point is that how you treat these unvarnished texts and whether or not you look for dimensions of Kedushas Eretz Yisrael that go beyond the obvious and that affect the entire Jewish world, diaspora included, albeit with a center in Eretz Yisrael, these reflect a different approach, a less slogan-oriented and less radical approach, but in the end a more ambitious and a deeper approach to these issues. If I was going to speak about or analyze the halakhic writings of American religious Zionists, the program I would undertake would be to examine how these various texts fared in the treatment of these topics, whether it's the Gemara in Masechet Ksuvos, the Sifrei, the other side of the coin, the exceptions which allow one to leave Eretz Yisrael, how expansive are they or how limited, etc. There's a methodology, in other words, that can be developed which would highlight that different communities have different perspectives on the role of Eretz Yisrael in Jewish life, on the religious status and stature of Medinas Yisrael, on the historical and philosophical question whether or not the opportunities sometimes signified by Reishis Tzmichas Geulah Seinu represent a discontinuity in history or continuity, etc. And I think that there are a lot of nuances to bring out. For our purposes today, and for, you know, summing up, since I don't have any more time, I'd just like to say that, again, both of the honorees are really loyal Talmidim of this ideology of Rav Soloveitchik. And what makes it particularly more impressive is that it isn't always conscious. A true Talmud of a Rebbe is somebody who imbibes this philosophy, and it becomes part of him, and again becomes expressed in his own inclinations and in his own interests. Again, I've grown up with my father, you know, quite a few years, and I know his views of Jewish history and its sweep, his perspective on the relationship between the establishment of the state and the Holocaust, but especially what he calls the providential principle of Jewish history, which is reflected in this modern episode as well. And through my readings and my admiration for Rabbi Roth, his books on the political and philosophical status of the state, the idea of war and peace in the context of the state, these are contributions, both intellectually and pragmatically, which are anchored in and rooted in this perspective of the role of Eretz Yisrael in world Jewry, which is less slogan-oriented, but in my opinion, far more substantive, and they've made a tremendous impact on our community, ideologically and halakhically. But even more important, or at least as important, is the communal leadership itself. The amount of American Jews, Rabbi Blau mentioned earlier, you know, in the early history, there were no such thing as an American religious Zionist or an American-born religious Zionist. But the impact that Talmidim of the Rav have had in imbuing a generation, or two generations already, with love for Eretz Yisrael, the amount of Aliyah and the impact of the American Aliyah on every aspect of the state is a topic in its own right, but one which also deserves to be credited to the rabbinic leadership of that special generation. So I just want to conclude by thanking again the sponsors for inviting me to participate. As I say, from both points of view, it's really a special service. Thank you.